A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The rocket siren goes off at 2 a.m. You're groggy. Your wife is shaking you awake. The kids are in different rooms. And the nearest shelter is an unmarked stairwell 100 meters away through darkness. What do you grab? Not a flashlight to see. Something to be seen. Something that screams here to your family and anyone else stumbling through the dark. That's the question Daniel sent us, and it's one he lived through repeatedly during the war with Iran. He's asking about a category of light most people don't even know exists, dedicated signal lights. Not flashlights with a strobe mode buried in some menu, but devices built from the ground up to flash, strobe, and signal. What are they called? Who makes them? Why is the market so fragmented? And is there anything out there that fits in a pocket and can guide people to safety from 100 meters away?
This is one of those categories where the thing he's looking for, a pocketable, high-intensity, multicolor signal beacon, essentially doesn't exist off the shelf, which is fascinating because the engineering to build it absolutely does. But let's start with what these things actually are, because most people have never held a dedicated signal light. I'd bet that if you stopped 100 people on the street and asked them to name a brand of signal light, 99 would stare at you blankly, and the one guy who answers is a volunteer firefighter who's used roadside flares.
I hadn't until I started digging into this, and the taxonomy is kind of a mess. It's like someone dumped a box of Lego on the floor and said, organize these by purpose. Half the products don't even agree on what to call themselves.
So a dedicated signal light is a battery-powered device whose primary function is visual signaling. Strobe patterns, alternating colors, SOS sequences, rather than illuminating an area or throwing a beam downrange. And this distinguishes it from what you find on 99% of so-called tactical flashlights, where the strobe is an afterthought. You hold down the button for 3 seconds, or you triple-click, and you get this anemic little flicker that's often dimmer than the main beam and has terrible off-axis visibility.
The Glockenspiel of emergency preparedness. Technically present, nobody's listening.
A proper signal light prioritizes brightness at the expense of everything else. Runtime, beam shape, sometimes even user interface simplicity, because its job is attention. And the market breaks down into roughly 4 buckets. You've got clip-on backpack lights, which are mostly cheap consumer products for joggers and cyclists. You've got tactical signal lights, which are the military and law enforcement grade stuff. You've got roadside flares, both chemical and LED. And you've got emergency beacons, which is the marine and aviation survival category.
Daniel's use case. Guiding family to a shelter at night, visible from 100 meters, pocketable, doesn't fit neatly into any of those. It's like he's shopping for a vehicle that's simultaneously a motorcycle, a pickup truck, and a sedan.
It really doesn't. The clip-on backpack lights are too dim. The tactical units are too big or too expensive, or both. The roadside flares are designed to be placed on the ground, not carried. And the marine beacons are single color and often single function. I want to pause on that last one for a second, because marine beacons are actually a great case study in how a product category can be simultaneously mature and completely wrong for a different use case. The ACR Firefly Pro, for example, it's been refined over decades to do exactly one thing, attached to a life jacket and strobe white light so a Coast Guard helicopter can spot you in open water. The engineers have optimized the blink rate, the waterproofing, the battery life, everything. And it's utterly useless for Daniel because it doesn't do red, doesn't do SOS, and isn't designed to be held up and waved at people on the ground. It's a perfect product for a completely different problem.
Let's get into why. What's happening inside these things that makes a good one hard to build small?
Okay, so the core technology is the multicolor LED. Most signal lights use either discrete LEDs, individual red, blue, green, white emitters, or an RGB package where multiple dyes sit under one dome. The Princeton TechViz, which is one of the best known tactical signal lights, uses 4 separate LEDs in a horizontal array, red, blue, green, and IR, plus a white LED for task lighting. and the reason they're separate rather than a single RGB module is efficiency and thermal management. Each color has a different forward voltage and optimal drive current, so you get better performance by running each one on its own circuit. Think of it like plumbing. If you try to push water for a shower, a dishwasher, and a garden hose all through the same pipe at the same time, you're going to have pressure problems. Separate pipes, separate control.
Different colors look different in brightness, even at the same power draw, right? I've noticed this just messing around with those little keychain lights. The red one always seems dimmer than the white one, even when they're fresh out of the package.
That's the Purkinje effect. In bright light, your eye is most sensitive to green-yellow wavelengths, around 555 nanometers. But in low light, your peak sensitivity shifts toward blue-green, around 507 nanometers. Red, at 620 to 700 nanometers, falls off dramatically. So a red LED pumping out 100 lumens looks noticeably dimmer to a dark-adapted eye than a white LED at the same 100 lumens. This is why a lot of military signal lights include blue and green. They pop harder in darkness. But red has the advantage of not destroying night vision, which is why it's the standard for astronomy and tactical map reading. You can glance at a red-lit map and then look back up at the darkness, and your eyes haven't lost their adaptation. Do that with white light and you're blind for 30 seconds.
If you're trying to be seen from 100 meters at 2 in the morning, you actually want blue or green, not red.
For raw conspicuity, yes. But red carries meaning danger, emergency, stop. It's culturally coded. And it doesn't attract insects, which is a non-trivial consideration if you're standing outside a shelter for 10 minutes. Blue is the most visible at night from a distance, but it scatters more in fog and haze. There's no single best color, it depends on conditions, which is why the ideal signal light lets you choose.
Daniel mentioned alternating red and blue patterns specifically. That's the law enforcement wigwag. And I can see why. It's instantly recognizable. You see that pattern, and your brain doesn't say, oh, a light. It says, police, ambulance, something official is happening here.
And this is where we hit regulatory friction. Alternating red and blue is restricted in a lot of jurisdictions because it implies an emergency vehicle. California Vehicle Code Section 25252, for example, explicitly limits red and blue combinations to authorized emergency vehicles. Other states have similar statutes. Now, is anyone going to arrest you for using a wigwag to guide your family to a bomb shelter during a rocket attack? Almost certainly not. But it's worth knowing that if you walk around with one clip to your backpack in peacetime, you might get a conversation you don't want. And that conversation could be anything from a curious cop to an impersonation charge, depending on how bored the officer is.
The law is not optimized for the 2 a.m. siren scenario. It assumes peacetime, clear context, and reasonable alternatives, none of which apply when you're standing in your pajamas in a stairwell.
No. And this is one of those areas where the tactical marketing actually works against civilian users. A lot of these lights are sold with features that sound cool. IR modes for night vision, programmable strobe patterns, but that 90% of buyers will never use and don't understand. I've seen product listings that boast about encrypted IR beacon modes, as if that's going to help someone find their tent at a campsite.
IR mode on a civilian signal light is like putting a tow hitch on a sedan. Technically you could, but you're not towing anything, and you paid extra for the privilege, plus your fuel economy is worse.
You paid extra for the privilege. The Princeton Tech Viz includes IR because its primary customer is USSOCOM. It's part of the Special Operations Forces Equipment Program. The IR LED lets operators mark positions or signal to each other when everyone's wearing night vision. For a civilian hiker or a dad in Jerusalem, that feature is dead weight. It's a switch position you'll never use, a circuit drawing parasitic power, and a component you paid for in the bill of materials.
The Viz is the gold standard. What are we actually looking at with that unit?
The Viz is a clip-on signal light that runs on a single CR23A battery. It's got red, blue, green, IR, and white LEDs. It offers 6 modes, various strobes, solid colors, and an IR beacon. Waterproof to 66 feet, which is 20 meters. The clip is designed for MOLLE webbing or a backpack strap, and it costs about $80 as of mid-2026. The output on the colored LEDs is not spectacular by flashlight standards. We're talking maybe 30 to 50 lumens per color, but because the emitters are focused through individual optics, the perceived intensity at a distance is much higher than the lumen number suggests. It's the difference between a bare light bulb in a room and that same bulb behind a Fresnel lens in a lighthouse. Same photons, completely different reach.
This is where the candela versus lumens distinction matters. I feel like this is the thing that trips up most people when they start shopping for lights of any kind. They see 1,000 lumens and think it's a searchlight, but it's actually a floody mess that dies at 50 feet.
Lumens measure total light output. Candela measures intensity in a specific direction. For signaling, candela is everything. A tightly focused 10-lumen red LED can be visible for kilometers if the beam is collimated properly. A 100-lumen floody white strobe scatters everywhere and disappears at a few hundred meters. The ANSI-NEMA FL1 standard for strobe duration is supposed to measure runtime until output drops to 10% of initial brightness, but manufacturers game this by testing at lower duty cycles. The light is off more than it's on, so the battery lasts longer on paper. You have to read between the lines. And most consumers don't know the lines exist, let alone how to read between them.
The spec sheet numbers are basically vibes. Marketing copy with a thin veneer of engineering respectability.
Vibes with a standards body stamp. And this is a recurring theme in the signal light market. There's enough demand for military and law enforcement to sustain a few high-end products, enough demand from joggers to sustain a sea of cheap clip-on lights, and almost nothing in between. The middle is a ghost town.
Let's talk about that cheap end. What does a $15 backpack light actually give you? Because I see these things at every checkout counter, in every outdoor store, and they look...
The Night Eyes Radiant 80 is a good example. It runs on 2 CR2032 coin cells, offers 3 patterns, slow flash, fast flash, and steady, and puts out about 30 lumens. It's fine for making a jogger visible to cars on a well-lit street. It is utterly inadequate for signaling across 100 meters of dark urban terrain. The LEDs are low power, the optics are just a plastic diffuser, and the coin cells sag under load. But it costs $15 and weighs almost nothing, so people buy them by the fistful. And to be fair, for the jogger on a street with streetlights, it's adequate. The problem is, when people assume adequate for jogging means adequate for emergencies, those are not the same thing.
The musical equivalent of beige wallpaper. It's technically on the wall, but nobody's going to notice it.
On the other end, you've got the Streamlight Sidewinder Compact 2. Military issue, runs on either a single AA or a CR123A, offers white, red, blue, and IR LEDs, and has a magnetic clip and a rotating head. But it's primarily a task light with signal modes, not a dedicated signal light. The strobe is an afterthought, exactly the problem Daniel identified. The Sidewinder is a fantastic piece of kit for reading a map under night vision, but it's not optimized for look at me from 100 meters away. The beam pattern is designed for close-up work, so even in strobe mode, most of the light goes into a tight spot that you'd have to aim directly at someone's face for them to notice.
The market is bifurcated. Cheap and dim on one side, expensive and over-featured on the other. Nothing in the sweet spot. It's like trying to buy a car and finding only go-karts and armored personnel carriers.
The sweet spot is surprisingly demanding. Let's think about what Daniel's ideal device actually requires. It needs to fit in a jeans coin pocket, so we're talking roughly the size of a Zippo lighter, maybe a bit thicker. It needs high-intensity strobe in at least 2 colors, preferably red and blue, at 200 plus lumens. It needs user-selectable patterns, SOS, alternating, slow flash. It needs a clip or a magnet for hands-free attachment. And it needs to run long enough to last through a shelter-in-place event, which in Israel during the war could be anywhere from 10 minutes to several hours of intermittent alerts.
That's a lot of engineering in a very small space. And every one of those requirements fights against the others.
The thermal problem alone is significant. At 200 lumens, an LED is converting maybe 30 to 40% of its electrical input into light and the rest into heat. In a pocket-sized device with no heat sinking to speak of, you can run that strobe for maybe 30 seconds before the LED junction temperature exceeds safe limits. So you need thermal throttling, which means the brightness drops. Or you need a duty cycle so aggressive that the average output is much lower than the peak. Either way, sustained 200-lumen strobe in a Zippo-sized package is genuinely hard. It's not impossible. Phones manage similar thermal challenges with their flash LEDs, but phones have the advantage of spreading heat across the entire chassis. A dedicated signal light the size of a Zippo has nowhere to spread the heat to.
Because even if you solve the heat, you still have to power the thing.
This is the other bottleneck. A jeans coin pocket eliminates 18650E cells. They're 18 millimeters in diameter and 65 long, which is bigger than most pockets. A CR123A is 16 by 34 millimeters, which is closer but still chunky for a coin pocket. A 16340 rechargeable is the same size as a CR123A. You could go with a 14,400, that's a AA-sized Li-Ion, or even a 1440, which is AAA-sized. But capacity drops fast as you shrink. A 10440 gives you maybe 350 mAh. At 200 lumens, you're drawing several amps. That battery is dead in minutes. You'd get maybe 10 or 15 minutes of intermittent strobe before it's toast.
The device Daniel wants is possible, but it would have terrible runtime. You'd get your family to the shelter, and then the light would die.
Unless you use a built-in LiPo pouch cell, which is what phones and vapes do. That lets you maximize capacity for a given volume. But now you've lost user-swappable batteries, which is a problem for emergency preparedness. A CR23A has a 10-year shelf life and works at minus 40 Fahrenheit. A LiPo cell discharges in months and hates the cold. Tactical users overwhelmingly prefer CR123A for exactly this reason. You can stash the light in a go bag and forget about it for a decade. Pull it out in 2036, it still works. Do that with a LiPo device and you're holding a paperweight.
Daniel's use case splits the difference in an awkward way. He wants pocketability, which pushes toward built-in LiPo. He wants emergency readiness, which pushes toward CR123A. He wants high output, which pushes toward 18650. He can't have all three. It's a classic engineering trilemma. Pick two.
This is why the product doesn't exist. It's not that nobody's thought of it, it's that the engineering trade-offs make it a bad fit for every established market segment. Hikers want lightweight and long runtime, they'll take a headlamp. Cops want belt-mounted visibility, they'll take a full-size light with a traffic wand. Preppers want multifunction, they'll take a flashlight that also signals even if it signals badly. The person who wants a dedicated, pocket-sized, high-intensity signal beacon is a niche, within a niche, within a niche. And in consumer electronics, that usually means you're either building it yourself or paying someone to build it for you.
Which is a shame, because Daniel's scenario is not actually that niche. Anyone who lives in a conflict zone, or in Tornado Alley, or in a wildfire-prone area, or who boats, or who hikes in avalanche terrain, they all have versions of this need. I need to be found, and I need to guide others, and I have exactly one pocket. That's not some weird edge case. That's millions of people.
Let's go through the adjacent categories that come close, but don't quite land. Roadside LED flares. The Road Flare RF1 is a good example. $40. Runs on 4 AA batteries, 360 degrees of visibility, magnetic base, multiple flash patterns. It's bright, it's reliable, it's designed for exactly this kind of attention. Getting. But it's the size of a hockey puck. You're not putting it in a jeans pocket. And I want to dwell on this for a second, because the RF1 is actually a brilliant product for what it is. If you're a trucker who needs to mark a disabled vehicle on a highway at night, it's perfect. Set it on the roof, turn on the amber strobe, and every car for half a mile knows something's up. But Daniel can't set a hockey puck on his shoulder and walk to the shelter.
It's designed to be placed, not carried. The whole form factor assumes you're going to set it down and walk away from it.
It's a beacon you set down, not one you wear. Then you've got marine strobes like the ACR Electronics Firefly Pro. $30, single CR23A, waterproof, one candela output, which is not bright, but it strobes and it runs for hours. The problem is, it's single color white, non-rechargeable, and the pattern is fixed. You can't switch to SOS or red. It does one thing, white strobe, and it does it for a very long time. But that one thing isn't what Daniel needs.
One candela is basically a polite suggestion of light. It's the visual equivalent of clearing your throat.
It's designed for life jacket attachment where you're floating in the water and a rescue helicopter is looking for a pinprick against a dark ocean. Different use case entirely. Then there's the Phoenix CL09, which is a camping lantern that happens to have a red strobe mode. $35, one 18-60-50, compact for a lantern, but still too big for a pocket. And the strobe is, you guessed it, a secondary mode with lower output than the main light. It's a lantern first, a signal light fourth or fifth.
The market keeps saying, we put a strobe on it, instead of, we built a strobe. And that distinction is everything.
That's the fundamental distinction Daniel is drawing. He wants a device that does one thing well. The flashlight industry's entire economic model is built on doing many things adequately. More modes, more features, bigger numbers on the box. A single-purpose signal light is commercial suicide for most manufacturers because the total addressable market is tiny. You can't sell 100,000 units to REI if the product only does one thing that most customers don't even understand they need.
What about the DIY scene? You mentioned people building their own. This feels like exactly the kind of problem that a maker with a 3D printer and an Arduino would look at and say, I can fix that in a weekend.
This is where it gets fun. There's a small but active community of makers building custom signal beacons. The typical build uses an ATtiny85 microcontroller. That's an 8-pin chip that costs about $1, driving a high-power RGB LED through a MOSFET. You program the patterns yourself in Arduino, 3D print an enclosure, and power it with a small LiPo. There's a kit on Tindy called the Pocket Beacon that goes for about $50 and gives you programmable strobe patterns in any color. The output is maybe 50 lumens, not 200, but the concept is proven. And the beauty of the open source approach is that you're not locked into someone else's idea of what patterns matter. You want SOS in green followed by a slow pulse in blue. Write the code. It's yours.
50 lumens in a focused optic can be surprisingly visible. I've seen those little keychain lasers that are technically less than 5 milliwatts, but you can see the dot from a mile away. It's all about collimation.
And the advantage of a custom build is you can optimize for exactly your use case. Daniel could commission a small batch from a maker on Etsy or Tindy, specify 200 lumens peak, red and blue alternating with the user, selectable SOS mode, USB-C, rechargeable with pass-through so it can run while charging, and a magnetic clip. That's a weekend project for someone who knows what they're doing, and the bill of materials is maybe $30 in components. The labor is what you're paying for. You're not paying for the parts, you're paying for someone's expertise in thermal management and firmware.
You'd get exactly the interface you want. None of this hold for 3 seconds business. No triple-clicking through menus while your kids are crying.
The UI problem on commercial lights is real. Under stress, 2 a.m., sirens, kids crying. Fine motor control goes out the window. You need a single switch that does exactly what you expect every time. Click once for red strobe, twice for SOS, hold for alternating, or whatever your sequence is. The point is, you should be able to operate it by feel while running. And this is something the tactical industry actually understands pretty well. Weapons lights have straightforward interfaces because people's lives depend on them, but that design philosophy hasn't migrated to the signal light category yet.
The best UI in an emergency is, it's already doing the right thing when I pull it out. Just yank it from your pocket and it's strobing.
Which argues for a dedicated device that lives in your pocket and has exactly one job. And this is where I think Daniel's instinct about buy tech products that do one thing well is exactly right. A multi-mode flashlight that also signals is like a Swiss Army knife with a corkscrew. It works, but you wouldn't want to open a case of wine with it. You'd get through maybe 3 bottles before your palm was bleeding and the cork was shredded.
Especially not at 2 a.m. with rockets incoming. That's not the moment you want to be fumbling with a multi-tool.
Let's talk about search keywords, because Daniel asks specifically about that. If you're looking for these products, flashlight with strobe is the wrong search. It returns thousands of multi-mode lights where strobe is an afterthought. Better terms, tactical signal light, emergency strobe beacon, multicolor rescue light, clip-on safety light, backpack signal light. For hikers and climbers, avalanche beacon strobe or personal locator beacon light will surface relevant products, though most of those are transceivers first and light second. The vocabulary matters because the algorithms don't understand intent. They just match keywords.
What about the overseas market? Nikkor and Olight are Chinese manufacturers that move faster than American companies on niche products. They seem willing to take risks on weird form factors.
They do, and both have signal modes on some of their lights, but neither has a dedicated signal. First product, in pocketable size. The Nightcore Innu series of headlamps includes red strobe modes, and the Olight Gober is a clip-on safety light with RGB LEDs, but it's 30 lumens, a visibility marker, not a signaling beacon. The Asian market tends to chase the bike commuter segment for clip-on lights, and that segment is price-sensitive and doesn't demand high output. They want cars can see me at 20 meters on a lit street, not my family can find me across a dark plaza. Different problem, different product.
The Princeton TechViz remains the closest off-the-shelf option, despite not being pocketable. If you're willing to compromise on size, it's the one.
For Daniel's specific use case, guiding family to a shelter, visible from 100 meters, multicolor, the Viz mounted on a backpack strap or belt loop is the best option under $100. It's not pocketable, but it's clip-on, which means it's always with you if you're wearing your go bag. Pair it with a high visibility vest or a chemical light stick as backup, and you've got a solid system. The vest gives you passive visibility even if the light fails, and the chem light gives you a zero battery fallback that works underwater, in rain, in anything.
If you absolutely must have pocketable, what's the fallback? Say you can't wear a go bag. Say you're in pajamas, and the only thing you have is what's in your pockets.
The ACR Firefly Pro for a single color strobe. Red is the best choice for preserving night vision and is universally recognized as emergency. $30 CR23A, waterproof, runs for hours. It doesn't do alternating colors or SOS, but it strobes, and it's small enough for a coin pocket. Pair it with a cheap blue-white bike light for color variety if you need it. That's two devices instead of one, but together they cost under $50 and fit in separate pockets. One in the left pocket, one in the right. Red strobe in one hand, white strobe in the other. It's not elegant, but it works.
The two-light solution is inelegant but practical. And honestly, redundancy in an emergency isn't a bug, it's a feature. If one fails, you've still got the other.
Sometimes, that's the right answer. The preparedness community has a tendency toward gear maximalism, the one perfect device that does everything. But as we've just spent half an hour establishing, that device doesn't exist. So you compromise on elegance and optimize for function. Two cheap things that each do one job well are often better than one expensive thing that does both jobs poorly.
Let's talk about testing. If someone buys one of these, how do they verify it actually works at distance? Because you can't just shine it at your hand in the living room and say, yep, that's bright.
Ignore the lumen rating for colored LEDs. It's almost meaningless. Look for candela or lux measurements if the manufacturer provides them, which most don't for signal lights. The practical test is, take the light to a dark area, have someone hold it at 50 meters, then 100 meters, and see how visible it is from different angles. Most signal lights have decent on-axis visibility but fall off dramatically, off-axis because the optics are simple. You want something that's visible even when you're not looking straight at it. Have your partner hold it at waist level, then above their head, then behind their back. Walk around them in a circle. See where the light disappears. That off-axis dead zone is where you lose people in an emergency.
The difference between I see it and I can't miss it is huge in an emergency. One is a data point. The other is a command.
It's not just brightness, it's attention capture. A steady light is easy to overlook. A strobe, especially an irregular one, triggers something primal. Your peripheral vision is wired to detect flicker. The SOS pattern, 3 short, 3 long, 3 short, is recognizable even to people who don't consciously know Morse code. It's a pattern that says something is wrong at a level below language. You don't need to know what SOS stands for. Your brain just flags it as intentional, urgent, and directed at you.
Which brings us back to the core insight. In Daniel's scenario, the light isn't for him, it's for everyone else. It's a tool of civic responsibility, guiding passersby, reuniting split-up families, marking an unofficial shelter that the municipality never got around to signing properly. He's not trying to find his way. He's trying to be found, and to help others find safety.
That reframes the whole product category. It's not a gadget. It's infrastructure you carry in your pocket. The unmarked stairwell becomes visible. The dark alley becomes navigable. The family separated by 100 meters of chaos finds each other. It's a piece of public safety that happens to be privately owned. And that's a strange category for consumer electronics, which is usually about what the device does for you, not what it does for the people around you.
Where does this leave us practically? For the listener who wants to buy something today, what's the recommendation? Give me the flowchart.
If you can tolerate clip-on rather than pocketable, buy the Princeton Tech Viz. About $80 available online, used by Special Operations Forces, multicolor with selectable patterns, runs on CR-123A. Mount it on your go bag shoulder strap and leave it there. If you need pocketable and can accept single color, get the ACR Firefly Pro in red. $30, tiny, reliable. If you want multicolor pocketable and have patience, go to Tindy or Etsy and commission a custom build. Specify your colors, patterns, and form factor, and expect to pay $50 to $100 for a one-off. And if none of those fit, the two-light solution, Firefly Pro in red plus a cheap bike strobe in white or blue, two pockets, under $50 total.
If you're handy with a soldering iron, the parts cost is about $30, and the firmware is open source. You can build exactly what Daniel described in a weekend, assuming you know which end of the iron to hold.
For most people, the takeaway is, do not rely on your flashlight strobe mode. It's dimmer than you think, it's harder to activate under stress than you think, and its beam pattern is optimized for seeing, not being seen. Buy a dedicated signal light. The difference in reliability and brightness is not a matter of preference. It's life or death. And that's not hyperbole. In Daniel's scenario, if his family can't see the light, they can't find the shelter. It's that simple.
The market hasn't caught up to the need yet. But the need is real, and the components exist. Somebody is going to kickstart a Zippo-sized, 4-color, 300-lumen signal beacon with USB. See charging in a magnetic clip, and they're going to sell 100,000 units to people who didn't know they needed one until the siren went off. And then the big manufacturers are going to wonder why they didn't think of it first.
The barrier is market demand, not engineering. As LED efficiency improves and microcontrollers get cheaper, that device is technically feasible today. The question is whether anyone will build it at scale. And my guess is yes. Someone listening to this episode is probably sketching a PCB layout right now.
Until they do, the best tool is the one you carry. If it's too big for your pocket, it stays in your car or your bag. Daniel's quest for a pocketable beacon is the right instinct. Keep searching, and if you can't find it, consider building it. Or find someone who will build it for you. The parts are out there. The knowledge is out there. All that's missing is the will to assemble them.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, Russian fur traders in the Aleutian Islands trained sea otters to deliver messages between outposts by tying small waterproof pouches to their forepaws. A brief and unsuccessful postal experiment that ended when the otters discovered the pouches contained dried fish and simply ate the mail.
The otters were not unreliable carriers. They were just correctly incentivized. The system worked perfectly from the otters' perspective.
The post office could learn something. Align the incentives and the mail gets delivered. One of the two.
This has been my Weird Probs. Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. If you enjoyed this episode, find us at myweirdprompts.com or on Spotify. Until next time.
We'll be here, probably not delivering mail.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.